Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Reclaim Podcast. I'm your host, Whitney Elise, just a black girl out here trying to help everyone do better, including and especially herself. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. If you're new here, hi, hello, and welcome. This is episode 251. 251 episodes of the Reclaim Podcast over 5 years. My word, we have been talking. And I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in every episode, for giving me my breaks, for remembering that I am a one-woman show. So the editing, the creation, the production, all that's me. All of that is me. And so I appreciate you guys showing me so much love, but also showing me so much grace when your girl needs a break, you know. But I deeply appreciate all you guys so much. In the last episode of the Reclaim Podcast entitled Yaya, for those who know, Cowboy Carter, or as Miss Tina calls it, Country Carter, for those who know, they know. That episode, we talked about the fallout surrounding Angel Reese and Amanda Seals. We talked about if it was worthy or not. Spoiler alert, it's not. We talked about Cowboy Carter. And we talked about Good Times, which I believe the first episode has been released. And as a little bit of a follow-up, it's as bad as we all said it was going to be. It looks like Seth MacFarlane, however you said that man's name, wanted to say the hard ER and make a show about it. And that's essentially what we got with this Good Times. There's one scene where a man, I guess he's like the main character, he's singing in the shower with a cockroach. Like, the baby is a drug dealer. Like, it's, and it sucks because there's so many, like, great people that are on this show, like Marseille Martin and Yvette, I forget her last name, but she's awesome. Seth Curry was, like, a producer. And I'm like, wait a minute. So, like, what's going on here? Like, why are we literally giving the Twitter trolls, the blue checks on Twitter, all of the racist material that they need? Like, why are we doing this? Some even down to the drawings. I said it last week and I mean it this week, or I said it last episode and I mean it this week, even down to some of the memes that I receive in some of the posts that I make on Twitter, because Twitter is not a safe space for anyone who does the work that I do. It's just not. I'm there because that's where I've built a community and I refuse to abandon them. Let me just put it like that. So some of the memes that I get look like the animation created by Seth MacFarlane for this show. And it's really upsetting. It's really upsetting to see. It's like every trope you could ever squeeze into a show and then animate it and you have Good Times. So I really don't feel bad about not watching, not supporting. Also an update. It looks like they pulled the League of Magical Negroes out of theaters. I'm not gonna hold you. I was actually invited to do some press for this film. I was very curious to see how it would go. I think we've talked about it on here before. I thought we were going to get like magical Harry Potter meets Friday, doing twist outs with wands, all the magical ways black folks can operate, like using magic, like the typical things that we would do, the very cultural things that we would do. And no, it was actually a satirical play about the magical Negro, where the main character finds himself trying to keep white people happy, because that's the trope of the magical Negro. And he falls in love with a white girl who it would make the person that he's supposed to be making happy unhappy if he dated. And he has to decide to be either true to himself or true to his mission and his powers surrounding this object of his affection, this white woman. And there's a lot of problems. And maybe if it comes to streaming hopefully it'll come to streaming. We can stream it and we could talk about it. I feel like that would be fun on the Patreon, to talk about the League of Magical Negroes and why it, all the problems that exist therein. Y'all let me know if that's something y'all want to do. Like, me and Earl have actually been playing with this idea of watching certain things and reviewing them on the Patreon, and I think that'd be really fun because y'all seem to like him, and he's really funny and he's really insightful. But I could talk forever about my husband because I love him and he's brilliant. Hey babe. But that was last episode. This week in episode 251, and I will keep talking about 251 because holy smokes, that is a big deal. 5 years, over 5 years of the Reclaim podcast, over 250 episodes. Bananas. Wow. Just, I appreciate y'all. So I always stand you guys. Every episode is just like, I just love you guys so much. Yeah, that's me. But yeah, let's dive into this week's episode. Hit it, Earl.
Let the people of the Reclaim say amen. Glad to be here. Say amen again. And say amen one more time if you really like the show. We glad that y'all here today, and these will be your church announcements.
I want to send so much love to the family of Faith Ringgold. For anyone who does not know Faith Ringgold, she is the brilliant creative behind books like Tar Beach. She is an impeccable artist, a quilter, a sculptor, a performance artist, an intersectional activist. Her quilts tell stories. Basically, a woman surrounded by color and constantly manipulating it into telling the best of us. So I remember Faith Ringgold from reading Tar Beach. We actually have Tar Beach in Emmy's library, and I'm so just at a loss because Faith is such an important, vital part to not just children's literature, but literature and art and progress and activism. Just a brilliant voice. 93, a well-lived life. Very well-lived life. So we want to definitely send love to her family and her loved ones, and all who grieve. But we're grateful, so grateful that Faith was here. Let's dive into the mess. First of all, shout out to Vox for the incredible work that they do over there. If y'all have a chance to support good journalism in light of, you know, all of the firings and, you know, the mass layoffs and, you know, certain organizations deciding that they are not going to talk about political things, and political things could be anything, you know, anything could be political, anything could be politicized. Anyway, that's not the point. The point here is, shout out to Vox. If you can support good journalism, support this, support them. They're amazing. But Vox has just shared the story this week that the Supreme Court effectively abolishes the right to mass protest in 3 states, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, right? And their piece reads, the Supreme Court announced on Monday that it will not hear McKesson versus Doe. The decision not to hear McKesson leaves in place a lower court decision that effectively eliminated the right to organize a mass protest in the states of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. Under that lower court decision, a protest organizer faces potentially ruinous financial consequences. If one single attendee at a mass protest commits an illegal act. That's crazy. If the name McKesson sounds familiar, it is actually, yes, it's the McKesson we know. It's DeRay McKesson, a prominent figure within the Black Lives Matter movement, the movement for Black Lives, who organized a protest near Baton Rouge police station in 2016. I believe that was for the unlawful murder, I'm calling it a murder, of Alton Sterling. The fatal shooting of Alton Sterling, rather. Yeah, so apparently at that rally, one of the protesters picked up a rock and threw it and hit an officer, John Doe. They're saying Officer John Doe. He got injuries to his teeth, his jaw, his brain, and his head. Rather than prosecuting the person who threw the rock, they want to prosecute the person who organized the rally to begin with. This is bad. This is really, really bad. No one in good faith is going to create opportunities for rallies and protests and things like that, knowing that they could face ruinous, as the article says, ruinous consequences if just one single person does an illegal act. And an illegal act can be anything. It could be blocking traffic. It could be, I don't know, pick something innocuous, not actually like harming somebody, because in this case, somebody was actually harmed. And, you know, peaceful protest, the idea of a peaceful protest is it's supposed to be peaceful, girl. But because this person was injured, I just don't see merit in suing the organizer. So let me get this straight. You want people like DeRay McKesson to face consequences for creating rallies where people could get hurt, but not Donald Trump for January 6th, where people literally died, government property was literally mishandled, and all types of foolishness ensued. So we're not, like, officers were assaulted left, right, and center. People's mental health went in such a terrible place that officers were, you know, taking their own lives after a while. It was a nightmare. It was a nightmarish day, but Donald Trump can't face consequences for that. So you want organizers who are creating peaceful demonstrations of using their First Amendment rights to face consequences, but not a former president who literally incited a riot, told the people what was going on, told the people they got to take back their power, I'm looking at another piece by Vox right now that says, sorry, y'all, hold on one second, I'm getting overwhelmed. January 6th insurrectionists had a great day in the Supreme Court today. Most of the justices seem to want to make it harder to prosecute January 6th rioters. Reading again from Vox. So it looks like a bunch of January 6th insurrectionists had a really great day in the Supreme Court this week, which is really unfortunate because most of the justices seem to want to make it harder to prosecute January 6th rioters. Now, I remember a time when Black Lives Matter folks were demonized, criticized, and the police were militarized against us. Folks marching with cardboard signs seemingly threatened whatever's going on, which is, I'll put a pin in that. I'll come right back to that. Meanwhile, you have people who are actually busting police upside their foreheads, spraying bear mace on them, threatening the lives of actual senators, smearing feces all over the walls, taking documents from offices. You had an actual insurrection attempt. And you want to make it easier on these folks? Very bizarre. Telling, but very bizarre. When you see things like this weaponized, when you see identities like this weaponized, and I said this earlier, when you see identities like this weaponized, it tells you what people really believe is a threat. So we don't think the white people, because it was majority white people, barging up in to official proceedings of Congress to attempt to commit acts of insurrection, i.e., hey, we're going to murder people. We're setting up a gallows. We're very clear about what we're going to do. No. We're not going to take that seriously. But Black folks walking with cardboard signs and many people of many different races joining them, sheer threat, violence. No, I'm scared. I put that in there for free. So according to the article, the Supreme Court spent an hour and a half on Tuesday morning arguing over whether to make it harder, much harder, for the Justice Department to prosecute hundreds of people who joined the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. It appears, after Tuesday's arguments, that the majority of justices will side with the insurrectionists, though it is far from clear how those justices will justify such an outcome. It is very bizarre that folks who lit their job, this is not in the Vox article, this is my opinion, it is very hard to watch folks who are in the institutions defend people who were trying to dismantle the institutions, unless you yourself are an institution dismantling plant. That's the only way I could see them. There's no logical reason why you would, if this happened at the Supreme Court, where a bunch of folks barged in and was threatening to lynch whoever justice and whatever was going on, they're smearing poop on the walls of the Supreme Court. For real, y'all? You want to side with the insurrectionists? For real? Truly? For real? Let me just share some quick thoughts. White supremacy, people call it a disease. They call it an illness. But I'm strongly repulsed by that. Only because illness doesn't happen that way, you know. I try really hard not to blame people who are ill in some sort of way, because a lot of times it's not their fault. Now, you know, I can imagine my mama right now, like, if you're running around outside in the rain and you catch a cold, then that's your fault. But like, I try to separate illness from fault, because a lot of, like, nobody intends to get cancer. Nobody intends to have mental health struggles. Nobody goes out and intends for these things to happen. And they unfortunately do, you know? And illness feels like no fault. There's no fault to this. White supremacy is an intended choice. Choosing to believe that only one group deserves to be seen and viewed as human, to be listened to have their individualism upheld, to have people relate to them, to be the center of every story, to be the hero of every story, to be the center of all of history, the culmination of everything great comes from these folks. That's not an illness. That's a choice. It is a choice to be a white supremacist, you know? And while, yes, there are some things that we are all unlearning, that we learned either against our will or, you know, not within our knowledge that we learned were supremacist, I would say to remain in that is a choice. And so to look at a group of people who literally wanted to take the lives of sitting, governing Congress people who were fulfilling their duty in their role to elect the next president, and say, meh, maybe they shouldn't be getting as much time. Maybe we should make this harder for the Justice Department to do. Bizarre, especially in light of the earlier story that we talked about where, you know, DeRay McKesson was getting, you know, is getting a lot of heat for what one person did. One person did during a overwhelmingly peaceful march and rally, right? But this insurrection attempt, suddenly we want to make it easier. Suddenly we want to, like, we're not even going to hear DeRay's a case in order to protect the rights of those who are peacefully protesting. But insurrectionists, absolutely. We want to hear all about what y'all want to do. Now, let it have been. I know some folks are already with me before I say what I say. Let it have been a bunch of anybody else outside of white men and white women, because there were white women there too. But let it have been anyone outside of those two who even sneezed at the idea of raiding the Capitol, period. Not even like during official proceedings such as electing the president, but just raiding the Capitol in general. They would still be mopping up the blood. They would still be cleaning off the steps. It would have been a slaughter. And nobody would have thought any worse of it. Oh, you know, they earned it. Why didn't you listen to law enforcement? And you know, all the nonsense that they say to us that it does not apply to other people. So this is really bizarre. I want to see how this works, because according to Vox, the case known as Fisher versus the United States, which involved a federal law, which provides that anyone who, quote, obstructs, influences, or impedes any official proceeding or attempts to do so, end quote, commits a serious federal felony and can be imprisoned for up to 20 years. The majority of the people, I believe almost all, hold on 1 second, I'm looking at numbers. Actual sentences, so I guess all of the majority of the sentences have been below 2 years. Like, some people have gotten 2 years, but nobody's gotten more than that. But you can be, under this statute, you can be imprisoned for up to 20. I'm saying. According to the Justice Department, more than 1,265 people have been arrested for playing some role in the attack. Approximately 330 of them have been charged under the obstruction statute that we just talked about, one of them being Donald Trump, which is very interesting when you think about the justices sitting there and saying, maybe we should make it easier for insurrectionists, when one of the insurrectionists is probably responsible for you getting that appointment. See how it's all connected? A mess. It's a mess, y'all. But I will be keeping an eye on all these stories and all these developments, and I will be updating you. Let's move on. Okay, can we talk about not liking children? So, I've seen a bunch of these folks online talking about like how they don't like children, and that's their business. Like, it didn't really bother me. But what I randomly at the tippy top of this week, I just got this thought, like, yo, maybe, you know, there's nothing wrong with the kids. Maybe you're just mean, you know. Now, to be fair, children are high energy. They're loud. They are learning how to communicate. They're learning how to function as people in society. I mean, some of y'all adults should take note about some of the things that the kids are learning, because some of them are way more well behaved than you are. Just putting it out there, just saying. But there was a very popular tweet that was tweeted, actually on the same day that I tweeted what I tweeted. Holy smokes. Didn't realize that. I was really just going off of vibes, like what I was thinking. I'm like, no, maybe you're just mean. But yes, Too Many Spectra tweeted, I will die on this hill. It's fine and normal to dislike children. And then goes into a thread. They're loud. They're active. They frequently have daycare diseases. It's okay to not want to be around all that. No one is calling for banning children from public. Y'all are making that up. It's insanely normal to want to go to a bar and not to be around kids. And don't call me sexist against women or anti-parent, because this is the first generation where women are allowed to realize and express that they don't want kids. It's good that we're hearing this rhetoric. Maybe you've forgotten, but, quote, get married young and reproduce before you're a mature adult who can make the decision to raise a child, end quote, is the norm. Let women say, I don't want that for me. Let's have less kids growing up resented by their parents. I don't care if you're terminally online ass thinks tweets saying I dislike children translates to real world abuse. It doesn't. Child free people don't have children. Unpack your own baggage before you come knives out at people pushing back against the bad social norm. First and foremost, this was none of my business. Like, this was absolutely 100% none of my business. Like, this is a group chat thing, but you know what? Since you put it out there, it is not fine and not normal to dislike children. And there are a few reasons why I thought of this. One, what you're describing is not disliking children. What you're describing is not wanting children. And that right there is perfectly fine. There's a big difference between not wanting children and disliking children. There's a big difference. And I need folks to really hear me on this because a lot of people want to act like this is a quirky thing. Oh, I don't like kids. You do realize that children, that means people beneath the age of maturation, human beings, an entire population, in fact, that we all have to grow through before we get to be an adult. Like, you can't skip the kid part. You got to go through the kid part to become an adult. You do realize not liking an entire population of people is a bad thing, right? And there's a difference between not wanting them and disliking them. Sure, absolutely. Please do not have children if you do not want them. I am not that person that will tell you that you're selfish or that you'll regret it or that, you know, I know what having my daughter has meant to me, but that is my feelings about my own life that I am experiencing. That's not yours, right? And true, I don't believe that people who don't want kids should be forced to have them. Absolutely not. Mm-mm. No. And it's not just resenting the child, which is bullshit. Like, you can't blame the kid for your own resentment as an adult. Like, you cannot do that. Please do not do that. The kid has nothing to do with how they got here. Those were either your decisions or choices that were happening around you. And I'm saying this, all of the things I'm saying are predicated upon the consensual act of creating a kid. Okay? If it was non-consensual, I can't speak to that. I can't speak to that, right? So that's a separate thing, okay? So please acknowledge that I'm saying this right now. I am speaking about the consensual act of creating a kid and then having a kid afterwards. Don't have kids if you don't want them. Don't have them if you don't want them. And I'm not of the mind to tell people that they have to have them or they'll regret it later or they're selfish or anything like that. I am of the mind, though, that people are using this I don't like kids as this like quirky thing about their personality to make them seem interesting. When if you take that same logic and apply it to any other group of people, it reveals the hate. Like, if you take that logic and apply it to any other population of people, it reveals hatred. So why is it fine when it's children? You get what I'm saying? Yeah, I understand, you know, you going out to dinner and you being like a little frustrated that there are kids, you know, at the bar. Like, there shouldn't be kids at the bar, right? But if you're going to your local Applebee's and there's a family sitting at the at the tables and you're at the bar there, you can't be really like upset. Like, no, like going to your local dive bar, there shouldn't be a kid there. But, you know, like if you're getting your little margarita on at the Applebee's or wherever, like, you know, you got to kind of deal with that. Kids are a part of society. But because I overthink, I dug a little deeper into what Too Many Spectra was saying. It's very telling to dislike an entire age of people, and folks treat their dislike of this group more like a personality trait than a character deficit, which it is. It's a character deficit. Many, not all, I'm going to say many and not all. I want you guys to hear me. Like I said, they use it as a funny, quirky thing about themselves to make themselves more interesting. But if we were to apply this same proud dislike to any other group of people, it would actually reveal hatred, i.e. I don't like black people. You see, I don't like women. You see, and I picked two that I really, I don't like left-handed people. What the hell? Like, do you see how that's weird and strange and hateful? And if I was to go outside and yell, well, not me, but if someone else that did not have my identity was to go outside and yell those things outside or say those things in the middle of a meeting or so, whatever, it would be viewed as hatred. That'd be viewed as hate speech. Also, I need y'all to come and like put the pitchforks down because I'm going to say something real hard. I'm going to say something real hard, but I need you to hear me. A lot of folks, not all, many of these folks who don't like kids, many, not all, I'm saying many and not all, because I love when y'all just ignore. Well, how are you? How do you say that? But all, I didn't say all. That's not the words I said. Listen to the words that came out of my mouth. Many, not all, folks who dislike kids also ascribe, brace yourself, to feminist ideals. And there's nothing wrong with feminist ideals. I know y'all were getting ready to turn this podcast off. Y'all know that I am a womanist to my heart and to my core. Like, down, down, deep in who I am, I believe in the equality of everybody, right? Everybody. We all equal. We all breathe. We all exist. We are equal, right? There's nothing wrong with those beliefs, but those beliefs can be twisted to make you believe that the children, not the patriarchy, not the misogyny, not these gender roles that people try to force people to fit into, that you may not fit into and may not want to, not those things, but it's the children. It's the children's fault, which is sick. You're telling me that defenseless human, brand new human beings, people who are new here, it's their fault that you're unhappy that you ascribed to these beliefs. And now you're overwhelmed with these people that you created that you probably wouldn't have if you had the chance to actually think about this, right? So it's not the beliefs themselves. It's the twisting of those beliefs. It's this twist that makes you think that it's something wrong with the kids, not, it's something wrong with the kids and not, you know, the patriarchy. Like I said, all of the energy that you have for what's going on, aim it at the patriarchy, aim it at the misogyny, aim it at the misogynoir, aim it at the hatred of women and the oppression of women. It's not those kids' fault. Yes, kids are noisy. Very. Yes, kids are messy. Yes, I, as a person who constantly has to sweep my floors, because, like, I've never swept so much in all my life. Sweeping, y'all. Sweeping. I've never folded so many clothes in all my days. I have never had to catch boogers the way I do. And that's not my kids' fault. Kids require care. People require care, but kids especially require a level of care. And let's talk about this level of care, because this is also another reason why people, many, not all, many people, not all, people who dislike kids, is because they actually witness these kids receiving the love, care, and affection and affirmation that they probably needed when they were kids. So a lot of them are jealous. It don't take all that. It don't take all that. Does it not take all that, or did no one take all that with you? Did no one do those things with you? Did no one sit down and talk to you about things? This is where, like, a bunch of people and I, like, disagree, like, about the gentle parenting thing, because they're like, you don't have to talk to them. Yes, you do. You talk to them now, or you risk never talking to them as soon as they get older. You work with them now. You help them understand now. You create the critical thinking now. You create the love bond now. You create the relationship now. And if it frustrates me, I guess I'm just airing out all my little grievances. Shout out to the Black Girl Voices, that podcast I do with Siobhan, where we air out our grievances a lot. But I guess I'm airing out my grievances here. It really frustrates me when people try to demonize gentle parenting and try to turn it into weak parenting, when weak parenting and gentle parenting are not the same. See, the reason why you're gentle is because you know your own strength. You're choosing to be gentle. That's very different from being a weak parent, where you don't have the strength. And weak parenting is, I'm going to cave and yell and scream and violate privacy and basically be my kid's first bully, not explain things to them, not talk to them. Now, to be fair, like, I'm gonna be really, really fair with you. Do I explain everything to my kid? No, she's three. She's not gonna understand everything. Do I try to have conversations with her and reason with her and try to create a critical thinker? Absolutely, every chance I get. Every chance I get, because those skills will benefit her in her lifetime. We'll have another conversation about the gentle parenting thing later. But a few folks have come to me to talk about that. And I'm like, are y'all okay? Like, where you think that you, like, some people really think that they have to scream at their kid to be able to communicate with their kid. Some people really think that they have to bully their kid in order to create a stronger kid. And, like, none of those things really work. All you're creating is a resentful person who, as soon as they get old enough, will drop you in Shady Pines and not talk to you. Might send you a card on your birthday and Christmas. Might. And that's being generous. But back to not liking kids. Sorry. Hopping off my own grievances. A lot of these people see these kids receiving a lot of love and affection and attention and affirmation, and something in them rises where instead of saying, oh God, I wish I had gotten that. Ah, man, you know what? I'm gonna try to talk to a therapist and work this out. Nah, blame the kids. Blame the parents and the kids. How dare you take that extra time with your kid? How dare you be so affirming with that child? It doesn't take all of that. Yes, it does. Parenting is this is the thing. What else? What else? Because I wrote these all down in like random scribbles because I'm like, what, Whitney? It's also a cultural thing. Like in a lot of different cultures, I'm going to talk about Japan, for example, because it's the first culture that jumps into mind. I witnessed a few videos on TikTok where it was talking about little tiny kids in Japan being able to just walk to school. Just walking to school, their mom would send them to school. They just walk by themselves. Or they're going to the market by themselves. Their mom sent them with a little money. And, you know, the people help them at the market and they, you know, they take care of them. And this is not every parent. But the understanding is because they actually do care for their kids, they do embrace their kids, they do like their kids, that the culture has decided to protect their kids. The culture has decided to educate their kids. The culture has decided, hey, if we raise healthy, happy, fulfilled children that grow up to be healthy, happy, and fulfilled adults, our entire culture will be better. In many ways. Look at that. No, like over here though, we envy our kids and we dismiss our kids and we don't listen to our kids and we look at our kids as these burdens on us rather than the blessings that they are. Now, at 7:45, when you're trying to get that little one to bed and they want to have another story or water and another drink of water, they're making all these excuses to go to bed and you're exhausted. Yeah, it feels like a burden. But they in and of themselves are not a burden. And we as a culture have to decide if we're going to keep treating them like that. I've talked about this book before, but A Minor Revolution, How Prioritizing Kids Benefits Us All by Adam Benfornato is an incredible resource that talks about this very thing. It talks about kids' rights. It talks about how we should be investing in our children from various ages, from the first years up until their late adolescence and beyond, like how we can create a society of healthy, happy people by simply taking care of our kids, by prioritizing our kids, by loving our kids. And, you know, I don't know, quirky little people who want to be like, oh, I'm interesting. Look at me. I don't like children. Oh, I'm saying a scandalous thing. No, you're not saying a scandalous thing. You're saying a hateful thing. This is a hateful thing to say. And I was trying to find a way to just hear this person out. But like, the more I listened, the more I read, I'm like, these are just your grievances because you had a bad night. Like, and you didn't understand why the people at Applebee's brought their kid to this one thing. That's cool. That's not the kid's fault. That's not the kid's fault. Like, it's just a very weird take to have on an entire population of people. Like, now you're not talking about, like, individual kids. You're talking about kids in general. The body of people known as kids you're speaking about. And that's wild. That is absolutely wild to me. So, do with that what you will. If you're one of those people who don't like kids, I want you to explore why that is. Yeah, I want you to explore why that is. I want you to explore what is going on, if it's one of the reasons why I mentioned, or if it's something completely different. I actually do want to hear back about this because I want to understand the mind of people who don't like kids. And again, I'm not saying everybody has to have them. Just because you like them, even if you like them, doesn't mean you need to have them. Like there are circumstances and conditions in which people, these kids are born and need to thrive in. And if you don't have those circumstances, that is perfectly fine to not have them. It's perfectly fine not to want them. I'm here for it. Hey, listen, you know, not my thing. Great, wonderful. But to straight up dislike them, to straight up just dislike them, like I need to hear from the mind of these of folks like this. So if this is you, no judgment. Yes, lots of judgment. But please let me know. TheReclaimedBlog@gmail.com or reach out to me on any one of my socials. The Reclaimed on Twitter, The Reclaimed on Instagram, or The Woke Mama on TikTok. I want to hear back from you. All right, let's move on. So I wanted to drop some good news in the chat. If you are unfamiliar with Birth Fund, you need to be familiar with Birth Fund. I'm currently doing a fundraiser on my own page where I'm sharing their fundraiser. But Birth Fund is a really big deal. And in light of Black Maternal Health Week ending this particular week, I thought it'd be really, really good to sit and center the good work that is actually being done to eliminate those terrible statistics that we know. Reading off of the Birth Fund website, birthfund.webflow.io, it says that the US maternal mortality rate is 10 times higher than any other high-income countries. Nearly half of new moms label their birth as traumatic, which is wild. And Black women are dying at 3 to 4 times the rate of white women during and after childbirth. This should not be the norm. 80% of maternal deaths can be avoided. Actually, the CDC says it's more than 80%. But that's still wild. Solutions are within our reach. And yeah, this is so good. The founder is a personal favorite of mine, the wonderful Elaine Welteroth. She wrote this beautiful letter about deciding to create Birth Fund, why it matters, why it's important, her own journey in giving birth. You know, I personally think of stories of like Serena Williams, you know, the top tennis player to ever tennis play. I think of Beyonce, and her birth struggles, and how she, you know, had to get her butt, like she, it was so much stuff. And if this is happening to women in, you know, a completely different socioeconomic bracket, a completely different dynamic than the majority of us who will be giving birth, I can only imagine what's happening to the rest of us. You know, and I've posted stories. Actually, this year I posted, unfortunately, more stories because every year there's always going to be more, unfortunately, until we actually come together as a society and do something about it. Like, we can only tout these numbers for so long. We actually have to do something to make it better. And there's story after story after story, from, and there was an Olympian. She passed away during some childbirth complications. There was this wonderful doctor. Like, it was just so many people, so many individuals, so many people who should be loving on their little ones instead of being mourned by the families that they'll never get to meet. Like, it's just, it's too much. It's too much. And so I'm glad that something is happening now. It looks like this particular fund is here to assist women in midwifery, which I actually found something very, very interesting. A lot of the birth workers, I believe pre-1950s, 1960s, were older Black women, and they were helping their communities give birth, go into labor, give birth, doing all those things, and they had a lot of positive outcomes. Here comes Dr. So-and-so in his white coat, and he basically, well, a bunch, I'm saying he, but it was an entire industry, basically diminished the midwifery, the doula, that sort of, you know, that sort of position, and tried to make it so that, you know, only hospital births are valid, only hospital births are safe. And obviously, looking at these numbers, nowhere apparently is safe. But I didn't realize that 50% of women said that their births were traumatic. Like, we don't, so half of the people actually, like, were traumatized by their birth experience. And it breaks my heart to hear those numbers, but it's so reassuring because, like, I remember my birth experience, and that's the reason why my daughter doesn't have a sibling. Like, if I had had a better birth experience, we probably would have another kid. And saying that out loud is heartbreaking, but it's so reassuring because it's like, it sucks. It sucks to have a traumatic birth experience. Like, but my God, it feels so reassuring to know that I'm like, that there's people out there like me. Not, it's not reassuring that they had this experience, but it's reassuring that there's out people out there like me who are working on this stuff to make sure that birthing people have better experiences, that our kids get to come home with us, that we get to come home with our kids. So yeah, shout out to all the birth workers, shout out to all of the organizations, shout out to all the folks who are doing the damn thing, because apparently, according to this website, midwifery care could avert more than 80% of maternal and infant deaths. It improves breastfeeding, it decreases NICU time, there's increased birth weight, significantly lower rates of postpartum hemorrhage, increased odds of vaginal birth, which, yeah, decreased use of episiotomy, reduced preterm birth rates. Like, this is crazy. There's so many benefits to just having a midwife. So many benefits. I didn't know this. I'm learning this as I'm recording this. So yeah, no, we need to make this a thing. We need to make this happen. I need y'all to go to birthfund.webflow.io or go to my Instagram, The Reclaimed on Instagram. You will see the Birth Fund fundraiser. Whoever can give, give. If you can't give, share. That's always a great thing to do. If you are unable to financially support, you can share. Sharing is an absolute free thing, and it benefits so many folks. You never know who you sending your stuff out to could reach. You never know. So anyway, that's it for this episode of The Reclaim Podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you for your likes, your shares, your subscribes. Thank you for getting me to episode 251. Looking forward to so many more episodes with you guys. Also, please, 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 please do not forget to leave a review. Drop 5 stars. Let the folks know how you feel about the show. Also, if there's stuff that you want to talk about, please tell me. Please tell me, because I want to talk about the things you guys want to talk about too, unless I don't want to talk about the things you want to talk about. But I will tell you if I don't want to talk about it. I would tell you if I don't want to talk about it. But I likely do. And I don't know if anyone's really, really interested. Like I said, Patreon, shout out to Patreon. They keep the lights on. They keep the energy going. You could join the dopest group of patrons over there. Have a Patreon exclusive podcast. Lots of access to paywall free content. Lots and lots and lots of blogs. There's like over 100 blogs over there right now. So you can hop on over and get your fill of The Reclaimed. Y'all know where to follow me. The Reclaimed on Instagram, The Reclaim on Twitter, The Woke Mama on TikTok. That's the name of that place, while it's still around. So yeah, that's it. I appreciate y'all. I love you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, peace, y'all.